continue discussing deep inelastic scattering. And just to remind you, the setup, we have an energetic beam of electrons colliding on our proton target, and it's going to cause some shower of hadrons. We have no idea what it is or how to calculate it. But we're going to try our best and see what we can figure out. And we're going to be looking in particular at inclusive scattering, which means that we're going to be summing over all possible hadronic final states. And so this is just the generic expression for the cross-section to go to an individual hadronic state H, and then we just sum over all of the different possible hadronic final states H. All right. So first of all, we have this quantity, the matrix element. Part of the matrix element we can compute, the leptonic part of it we can't. And so let's just parameterize the things that we don't know. So let's write down the matrix element. The lepton part is pretty straightforward to write down. And I have a photon propagator that will give me a factor of minus I over q squared. And then it's contracted into some hadronic object, which I don't really know what it is. But I'll write it as follows. It's going to take a proton in the initial state to some collection of hadrons in the final state. And because it's the photon interacting, the photon, you know, couples to the electromagnetic current. And so the operator that I should put in here is just the electromagnetic current operator times the electric charge. So I should write this as E times J mu. Here, let me write it like this. So E J mu, electromagnetic, is the electromagnetic current. That couples to the photon field A mu in the Lagrangian. I guess strictly speaking, I should be working in momentum space, and so I should be taking the Fourier transform of this current operator, but let's not worry so much about that. We don't really know how the current operator connects a proton to a collection of hadrons. That's not something that we can really compute. Depends on the details of hadronization. Just to be a little more explicit about this, if we put in the terms in the current operator that depend on, that couple to the quarks, that involve the quark fields, this would be E, and then I should sum over the different quarks. And then I should have the charge of each individual quark, and then Q bar, gamma 5, Q. So some level, this is kind of the operator that I would imagine sticking in here. So we don't know what this is, but we don't really need to. So let me write down the 1/4 sum over the spins of the matrix element squared. This is e to the fourth over q to the fourth. I have a 1/4. Then I have the lepton parts that involve a trace over the Dirac indices. I'll have a trace of L slash gamma mu, L prime slash gamma nu. Neglecting the electron mass. And then I have this hadronic part squared. And so I should put in something like H E J mu electromagnetic P times the complex conjugate to some other Lorentz index mu. So there's my matrix element squared. Now let me plug this into the cross-section formula. And I'm going to group the terms together in kind of a particular way. So I'm going to write some of the terms first, and then I'll write the rest of the terms after that. So let me first factor out 2 times the electron energy times the relative velocity. Then I'm not sure exactly why, but I'm going to be factoring out one of the factors of 2 pi and the 2 pi to the fourth. So it's just a matter of convention. Then I'm going to write the integral over the lepton momentum, d3 l prime over 2 pi cubed, 1 over 2 el prime. Then I'll write e to the fourth over q to the fourth. And then I'll write 1/2 trace of L slash prime gamma mu, L slash gamma nu. Let's see. Gamma mu L. Okay. I may have messed up the order here. Prime. Okay, this 1/2 is from averaging over the initial electron spin. Okay, so I've included some of the terms, and now let me include the rest. So I have a 1 over 2 EP from the initial prefactor there. I have my sum over different hadronic states. Nothing that I wrote in the top line depends on the hadronic part. It's only the lepton part. Now I have this product, and so I should be integrating over all of the final state hadronic momenta. I had 2 pi to the fourth, so I factored out 1, 2 pi, I'm left with 2 pi cubed. And then I have average over the proton initial state, sum over spins. Actually, let me write it down here. Okay. So it looks like a mess. And so what we're going to do is say that, well, given that we can't really compute any of this stuff here, because we don't know what these matrix elements are, we're just going to say it's some arbitrary function. One thing we know is that the function has 2 Lorentz indices. So what I get out should also have 2 Lorentz indices. I'll call it W mu nu. Haven't been exactly consistent with upper versus lower, but I think you know what I mean. And so all of the hadronic physics that we can't really compute will all just be lumped up together in this unknown function W mu nu. One thing to notice is that W mu nu itself doesn't depend on the hadronic final state, because in its expression, it is sort of lumped up. It has already lumped up all of the possible hadronic final states. And another way to see that is you can imagine that what we're doing here, if you move this one around over here, you can kind of see that what we have is sort of a sum over states, kind of in the middle. All right. So all of the unknown hadronic physics is going to be lumped up together in this unknown function, W mu nu. And then we also have something we can define called the leptonic tensor, L mu nu. which is 1/2 times the trace of L prime slash gamma mu L slash gamma nu. And so this is just 2 L mu L nu prime plus L nu L mu prime minus L dot L prime eta mu nu. Okay, so the leptonic tensor we know, the hadronic tensor we do not know. But what we can do is we can use Lorentz invariants to restrict the form that our hadronic tensor can take. So here is the object. So schematically, this is what we want to try to represent. We have a momentum Q going in. We have a proton momentum P going in. And then we have some hadronic final states coming out. And then we're summing over all of the different hadronic final states. In terms of the four momenta that it can depend on, the only momenta available are Q and P. So I have p mu, and I have q mu, and I have to construct a two-index object out of only those two momenta. So I want to write down all possible sort of ways I can construct a two-index object out of things that respect Lorentz invariants. So the Lorentz invariance restricts the form w mu nu. So here are some terms that I can write down. So I'm just going to be listing different possibilities. First of all, I could just have the metric tensor eta mu nu, so that's perfectly allowed. I can also construct two index objects out of the different momenta. So I could have p mu, p nu. I could have q mu, q nu. I could have p mu, q nu. I could have p nu, q mu. Or I guess there's one more involving the antisymmetric tensor, which would be epsilon alpha beta mu nu. And then I would write down p alpha q beta. Those are the only possibilities. So most of these don't work. So anytime I have, so for the following, q mu, q nu, q mu, p nu, q nu, p mu, these all vanish when contracted with L mu nu. L mu nu. So if I contract any q with any of the indices of L mu nu, it'll give me 0. And so W mu nu won't involve any of these things. Or at least if it did, it wouldn't contribute. And then the last one actually is not allowed as well. So epsilon alpha beta mu nu, q alpha p beta. This is not allowed. By parity conservation. You can imagine contracting this with L mu nu. At the end of the day, you'll have something that goes like three objects that correspond to three momenta in one object that corresponds to an energy component of a four momentum. That's odd under parity. And so the fact that electromagnetism is not a chiral interaction means it conserves parity, and so this type of interaction is not allowed. This type of term is not allowed. electromagnetism is not chiral. So there's only two terms that are allowed, just the first two. So I can write W mu nu is equal to eta mu nu plus P mu P nu. And then each one of these terms will have some unknown function. And so the convention is to define the unknown function in front of eta mu nu as minus W1. And the unknown function in front of P mu P nu is W2. And then by convention, I divide out a factor of MP squared, like this. OK, so so now I have two unknown functions. So W1 and W2, these are Lorentz scalars. And they only depend on Lorentz scalar quantities. For example, we defined many Lorentz scalar quantities during the last lecture. Q squared, x, y, nu, and so I would write W1 and 2 as a function of any two of those objects. Let's say x and q squared, for example. OK. So now I can write down the cross section. It is 1 half 2EL times VREL times 2 pi. I have an integral over the lepton momentum. I have e to the fourth over q to the fourth. And then I have L mu nu W mu nu. So now we're going to expand this out in terms of what we know for L mu nu and W mu nu. We're going to be working in this lab frame. So assuming that the proton is some target that's initially at rest. E mu would just be MP 0, 0, 0. So in this frame, we can take the relative velocity to be equal to 1. So we've neglected the mass of the electron. We're also going to be assuming the following, that the energy of the incoming and outgoing electron and also the energy transfer are much, much greater than the mass of the proton. So we're assuming that our beam is very relativistic, very energetic, compared to the mass of the proton. And also the energy transfer, nu, is much greater than the mass of the proton. I can compute the center of mass energies squared. It's just equal to S, which is L plus P squared. And so this is MP squared. I'm neglecting the electron mass. Then I have 2 P dot L. This is MP squared plus 2 MP times EL. And then again, of course, I can neglect this MP squared term. And so this is 2 MP times EL. Now, let me contract together the two tensors. So I have L mu nu, W mu nu. It's 2 L mu L prime nu plus L nu L prime mu minus L L prime eta mu nu, and then contracted into minus W1 eta mu nu plus W2 P mu E nu over MP squared. So when I do this, I get the following. I get 4 L dot L prime times W1. Then I get W2 times the following object. 4 P dotted into L, E dotted into L prime, over MP squared, minus 2 L dotted into L prime. And so I want to expand all of these things out in terms of the kinematic variables that I introduced last class. So first of all, L dot L prime is Q squared over 2, little Q squared, sorry, big Q squared over 2. And so this is 2 Q squared dotted in times W1. And then this term I can also express in terms of the kinematic variables. So I have W2 times the following. So because I'm working in the lab frame, the P will just be MP times the energy component of L, and similarly times the energy component of L prime. And so the MPs will cancel these MPs in the denominator. I'll just get 4 EL EL prime. And then here I have minus Q squared, using the fact that Q squared is equal to minus Q squared is equal to L minus L prime squared is equal to minus 2 L dot L prime. Okay. It's also useful to write that, okay, Q squared is equal to 2 L dot L prime. That's 2 EL EL prime times 1 minus cosine theta, where theta is the scattering angle. It's nice to express this as kind of an intermediate step in terms of the scattering angle. You get the following. There's 2 EL EL prime times 2 W1, 1 minus cosine theta, plus W2, 1 plus cosine theta. Now, the reason I've written down this expression is you might be wondering, given some differential cross-section that depends on two unknown numbers, two unknown functions, how do I disentangle those two functions? And you can see by the prefactors of, in terms of the scattering angle, that if you look in different kinematic regimes, either in large scattering angle or small scattering angle, you can pick out the two different functions, W1 and W2, and that's how you would extract them experimentally. So this one, this term would dominate for a large scattering angle. And this term dominates for small scattering angle. Okay. So that was just a little bit illustrative. How do you extract these two functions? Let's go back to this expression here and rewrite it in another way. So first, I'll look at the first term. And I'm going to relate Q squared to my variable Bjorkane x and also the momentum transfer nu. So I have 4 mp nu times x times W1. And then in the second term, I have 2 EL EL prime minus 2 MP nu times X times W2. And comparing these two terms, okay, MP is much smaller than either of the energies or the momentum transfer. And so this second term is just suppressed in the limit that we're working in compared to this first term. So we're just going to neglect the second term here, since MP is much, much smaller than EL, EL prime, also nu. Get rid of that. And then lastly, I'm going to rewrite nu and also EL prime, the outgoing electron energy, in terms of the other kinematic variable Y, fractional energy transfer. And so this is 4 MP times EL YX times W1 plus 4 EL squared 1 minus Y times W2. Okay, so it's a little bit of not too appealing algebra to get from there to there, but it's just the straightforward definitions from the variables that we defined. Okay, so now let me plug this into the cross-section formula. So I have 1 over 2 EL. I have 1 over 4 pi squared. I had a momentum over, I see. Here's the expression I want to evaluate. So I still have this integral over the 3 momentum. The 5 parts I can integrate, leaving me with an integral over the energy and also the scattering angle. So that's 2 EL prime squared DEL prime and then D cos theta and then divided by 2 EL prime. And I had 1 over 2 pi cubed. There's one factor of 2 pi from the phi integral, leaving me with 1 over 4 pi squared. Then I have a factor of 2 pi, e to the fourth over q to the fourth. And then I have L mu nu W mu nu, which I evaluated here. OK, so some things will cancel out. This will cancel one factor here. I guess various factors of 2 may cancel. What I want to do is, instead of doing an integral over energy and scattering angle, let's convert this to an integral over some of my kinematic variables. So we'll convert it to an integral over dx and dy. So let's just remember the definitions. Y is 1 minus EL prime over EL. And so this implies that dy is equal to minus d EL prime over EL. Or I could write this as d EL prime is equal to minus EL dy. Next, let's say x. So x was q squared over 2 mp times nu. Q squared I could write as 2 el prime el times 1 minus cosine theta over 2 mp times nu. So now if I take the derivative, I have dx is equal to minus el, el prime over mp nu times d cosine theta. So then this tells me that d cosine theta is equal to mp times nu over el, el prime dx. So I can combine these things. I get el prime del prime d cosine theta is equal to mp times nu times dx dy, just by multiplying together this and this, and multiplying it by el prime. You might be a little worried. I haven't really computed a Jacobian. I've computed the only two contributions to the Jacobian that are important. When you take the determinant, there is a contribution from the other diagonal. That term will end up vanishing, just because y doesn't depend on cosine theta. So dy by d cos theta will be 0. So this is what we get. So now let me take this, plug it into our integral. This integral over dx dy. I have e to the fourth over q to the fourth. I can write this as big Q to the fourth. And then I have some stuff left over, 4mp squared el yx times nu times w1 plus 4el squared 1 minus y w2 mp times nu. And again, I can simplify this a little bit in terms of some of the other variables. So I have this integral dx dy. So let me write e squared in terms of the electromagnetic fine structure constant alpha. So this will be 16 pi squared times alpha squared. So this, and canceled with a factor of 8 pi, will give me 2 pi times alpha squared. I'll have a factor of 1 over q to the fourth. And then a factor of 2 times MPEL is the center of mass energy S. So I have a factor of S times x and y. Nu can be expressed as y times el. Let's see, am I missing a factor of s? Ah, no, this el, sorry, we'll cancel this one here. And so I'll have s x times y. Left over, I'll have a factor of 2 mp from one of the ones here times w1. Then I have 2 times s times 1 minus y times leftover factor of 2 times w2. Okay, so it's getting slightly simpler. Now, it's convention to define this object not in terms of w1 and w2, but just to define two brand new functions, also Lorentz scalars. And it's just w1 times this extra factor of 2mp. And so this is called f1 with a superscript e which just tells us that this is an electron scattering process through the electromagnetic interaction. And similarly, it's useful to define this as another function, which is called F2, also with a superscript E. So this is just a little bit of notation. So we have F2, and again, it's a function of two independent variables. Let's take x and q squared, and it's just 2mp times w1 of x and q squared. And F2 is just, as a function of x and q squared, is just nu times w2 of x and q squared. So here's the final expression. Two pi alpha squared s over q to the fourth times f1 e of x and q squared times x y squared plus 2 f2 e of x and q squared as a times 1 minus y. Okay. So in the end, it may not look like much, but it actually is a big simplification. You know, considering that we knew really nothing about hadronization, or how the photon would couple a proton into an arbitrary hadronic final state, what we've done is we've expressed our ignorance at the end of the day in terms of these two unknown functions. And because it's an inelastic scattering process, it depends still on these two variables. And so these are two things that can be measured. As I mentioned before, you would just look in different kinematic regimes. Yes?
Has this been integrated?
Oh, sorry about that. Good question. So I should have written here an integral, dx dy. Thank you. What I meant to have done is take this version and write it as a differential cross-section. Which is just everything that I wrote here originally. Okay. So there we go. At the end of the day, we still have these two unknown functions, and so these are things that will have to be measured experimentally. Okay, so so why do we go through this exercise? Well, so far we've put in basically very minimal inputs about what the physics is inside of the proton. We didn't put in anything about QCD or the strong interaction or asymptotic freedom. And so I want to return to this exact same calculation and redo it from the level of QCD. And so let's start out, let's redo the calculation. Just say in the standard model. So let's write down again the cross section for an individual hadronic state. So we have electron proton scattering into electron in some arbitrary hadronic state H. Now we're going to use what we know about confinement, and then the flip side, which is asymptotic freedom, to be able to factorize this cross-section. This is the idea of factorization, which I introduced before. It's just the idea that short-distance physics is not affected by what happens at long distances. So because of factorization, I can write this cross-section as a factorized product of three different terms. So first, what I need to compute is, and this is what we will compute, is the cross-section for an electron to scatter off of an individual quark. I'll explain what the hat means in a second, but it's just a cross-section for this process. This is the short-distance physics. But now, if we want to scatter off of a quark, what we need to do is figure out what is the probability for finding a quark inside of the proton, let's say with a given momentum corresponding to the momentum of that initial state. So I'll write this as the probability Q, comma, P. And so this will be the probability for finding quark Q with momentum P in the proton. Next, I've scattered, and I have some final state quark Q. Next, what I need to compute is, what is the hadronic final state that we produce? And so what is the probability for an initial state Q starting from this proton, a final state Q to hadronize into a given final state? So this I'll just write as the probability for getting a particular hadronic state H. And this will be the scattering cross-section. For a given quark Q with momentum P. So this, and then at the end of the day, you know, what is the momentum of a given quark inside of the proton, and what quark are we even talking about? So what we need to do is sum over all possibilities. So I want to sum over all quarks Q and sum over all momenta, or integrate over all momenta P. Integrate all over all of the initial states. OK. So this is a very non-trivial relationship. Normally, what you would do is multiply the amplitudes by each other and then square all of that. And so the idea of factorization allows us to make a much more strong statement about what the cross-section looks like.
Excuse me.
Yes.
This is exactly what you mean when you say physics at short distances doesn't depend on physics at high long distance.
Yes.
Because we separate each process.
Yes, each process is separated. So the first term and the last term have to do with the long distance physics. So what's the probability for finding a quark inside the proton with the given momentum? That depends on sort of like the quote unquote the wave function of quarks inside of the proton. That's you know, how they're distributed over a Fermi. This will be dependent on short distance physics. So we're imagining that our quark is being struck by a very high energy photon, and so that's impulse is happening over a very short distance corresponding to the Compton wavelength of that very high energy photon. And then the quark will fly out of this collision with a given energy. And over large distances of order the Fermi scale, of order a femtometer, it will create some hadronic final state. So that, again, is long distance physics. OK, any other questions on this? So the hardest part of this calculation to compute is the last term. So if you have a given quark, you know, coming from the proton with a given energy, what is the final state set of hadrons that we have? So this one is something that is very difficult to compute. So let's just say it's unknown. But we don't need it. For an inclusive scattering cross section. So I can write the inclusive cross section as a sum over all of the hadronic final states. So this will be my sum over all of the initial quarks and momenta that I could scatter off of, times this probability, times my cross section for scattering off of individual quarks. And the only part of this expression that depends on the hadronic final state is the last term. And so you can see I have a sum over all possible hadrons times the probability to scatter into a given hadron. And now what we know is that this last factor has to be equal to 1 due to confinement. Confinement tells us that any quark final state will be in the form of hadrons. There won't be any free quarks or anything else. And so because of this, the total probability to scatter into all possible final states that are hadronic must be 1. So at the end of the day, these are the things that we're going to be needing. This is something that we can compute. Depends on high energy physics. And this is something that we cannot compute from first principles, but can be measured experimentally. And it's only a statement about the initial states of a proton. What is the probability for finding a quark in a proton with a given momentum? Something that can be measured. OK. So at the end of the day, this whole thing is just, we would just sum over all possible quarks and momenta times this probability times this object here. So this setup that I've written down is known as the parton model. The parton model predates actually QCD. It was invented by Feynman before it was known, really, that hadrons were made out of quarks. And but it's consistent with what we know about QCD. It's consistent. In fact, I motivated it based on asymptotic freedom and confinement. What does it mean, a parton? A parton just means that hadrons are made out of point-like constituents. So partons are the constituents. Inside a hadron. OK, we know, based on QCD, that these are quarks, antiquarks, and gluons. It's convention that quantities that are defined at the parton level are just given hats. And so that's why I wrote a hat over the cross section for scattering off the quarks. All right. So in principle, there's many different types of partons in the proton. The quarks and antiquarks can have, in principle, any flavor, and there's also gluons. Here, for electromagnetic scattering, we only need to worry about the quarks and antiquarks, because the gluons themselves don't carry electric charge. It's not possible for the photon to scatter off of a gluon. So here, for electromagnetic scattering, only the quarks and antiquarks are relevant, since the charge of the gluon is zero. OK. So now what we're going to do is compute. Yes?
So just to compute this sigma hat, we need to know the theory of what happens inside a proton?
Yes.
It was not clear if it was just like we assume that there is something, but we don't know what, or we need to know all the constituents of the protons.
Yes. Here, we're going to assume that we know the constituents of the protons.
Is it possible if we don't know anything about what is inside a proton, we just assume that we have subparticles?
If you don't know anything, you can still make statements. And if I tell you those statements now, it's not probably going to be clear what they mean. But let's just assume for the moment that we know that the proton is made out of quarks that are spin 1/2. And we'll proceed from there. If you don't know anything, you can still make a general argument about these unknown functions, F1 and F2. Another, perhaps more weaker statement is you can just try different possibilities for different types of fields that could be inside of the proton. And as an exercise, you'll have to do the case where quarks are spin 0. You'll get a different answer compared to what we do now. OK, so so we're going to compute this cross-section right now. And again, we're going to be working in the limit that the energies are all very large. So the coupling constant alpha s is very small. We're just going to be computing to leading order in alpha s, the strong coupling constant, which in fact is just alpha s to the 0th power. So we're only going to be computing the electromagnetic part of the interactions. So here is the diagram. It's just an electron scattering off of a quark by exchanging a photon with the momentum q. And so I'll keep the momenta labels as similar as I can. So we have L and L prime for the ingoing and outgoing electron. We have a momentum q for the photon. And then the quark will have a momentum little p, and the outgoing quark will have a momentum little p prime. So let's write down the matrix elements. This is u bar L prime I e gamma mu u of L, and I have minus I over q squared, and then I have u of p prime minus e q q, the charge of the quark in units of e, gamma mu, and then u of p. And OK. It's straightforward just to square this. I'll just write down the answer. So we want to square and then average and sum over the spins. We have 1/4 e to the 4th over q to the 4th. We have this factor of q, the quark charge squared. Then we have the trace of L slash prime gamma mu, L slash gamma nu. And then we have trace of p slash prime gamma mu e slash gamma nu. And we're assuming that all of the electron and also all of the possible quarks we can have will be massless. So neglecting all of the masses, we have 4 e to the fourth over q to the fourth q squared. Then we have L dot P, L prime dot P prime, plus L dot P prime, L prime dot P. Next, we can rewrite this expression in terms of Mandelstam variables. Because these variables are going to be at the parton level in terms of the parton momenta, I need to put hats on all of these variables. So I have S hat, which is P plus L squared. I have T hat, which is L minus L prime squared, which is also Q squared. And then I have U hat, which is L minus P squared. This one, I can write as 2 times p dotted into L, or 2 p prime dotted into L prime, again neglecting the masses of the electron and the quark. And then u hat is minus 2L dotted into p prime, or minus 2L prime dotted into p. And then also you can use the fact that if you add together all of the Mandelstam variables, this is just equal to 0. So, okay, using these relations, you can simplify this. You just have 2 e to the fourth qq squared over q. So I have q squared squared here, that's t hat squared. And then in the parentheses here, I just get S hat squared plus U hat squared. Okay. So we'll pause here. And when we pick up tomorrow, what we're going to do is just take this expression for the matrix element squared and plug it into the cross section. And then what we're going to do is integrate over our initial states. We're going to describe exactly what that means. OK, so if there are questions, I can answer questions.